That's it. Yeah.
So we're recording at this point.
Yeah,
we are, but it probably won't. It may not make it into the actual show until we say go.
Well, yeah. Great. So, welcome to this episode of the Ghost Whispers or Geek Whispers. Hi, I'm Andy Banta, and I'm at Andy Banta on Twitter. Formerly Mr. Iskazi at VMware, and now doing fun stuff at Data Gravity. Welcome to this episode of the Geek Whispers. My co-host here with me is Gabriel Chapman. Why don't you say hi?
Hi, my name is Gabriel Chapman. I'm Bacon is King on Twitter. I am a solutions architect for Simplivity, the hyperconvergence company.
And I wanted to introduce our guests tonight. We have Matthew Brender,
hey.
Amy Lewis, and John Mark Troyer.
Hey now.
Hello.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves?
This is Matt Brender, and I'm addicted to Twitter. This is a Twitter anonymous, right?
You're anonymous.
Well, you're amongst friends. You're definitely anonymous. So
yeah, definitely anonymous here.
Hey, I'm John Troyer. I'm not even sure what I do. I just was working on my 2014 goals, and even now I'm not sure what I do. But I do it for a living.
And you do it well.
I'm Amy Lewis, and I crowdsource what I do by putting it on LinkedIn and see whether people, you know, thumbs up it or not.
Amy, does that mean we could, like, do you take dares?
Yeah.
Because that could end that. We could do also, you know, you could do all sorts of stuff there.
We'll get back to that, Amy.
Andy, that's what would you say is going on here? I'm very confused. I'm a regular listener of the show.
Oh, we're just getting started. You're saying hi to everybody.
And what Andy's not telling you is this is the Geek Whispers, and this is our year in review show.
There you are.
There's been a little bit of a hostile takeover, intentionally. We've invited two community members and listeners, Andy Banta and Gabriel Chapman, and they are going to be hosting tonight's show.
So when it's odd and there are strange silences, you will know why.
Actually, we're just counting on Matt and John to edit those out.
Did we tell you we don't actually edit anything?
Yeah, we just sound perfect all the time.
It's too hard.
Live freeform is the best freeform.
So we're all here. What do you think? Give it to us straight. This was everybody's got to do a year in review shirt. We did a shirt that tells you what my brain is thinking. A year in review show, but we didn't have someone to come on without a shirt. Therefore, we've got you two. So what should we do here?
I could take off my shirt.
I actually do have one of your shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Amy has one of my shirts, too.
That's true.
I think that I could probably come up with a design for a year-in-review shirt for you guys that you'd really like.
Uh-oh.
Game on.
So anyway, the three of you seem to know something about this this social media thing. I was wondering if you could give us your take on what its origins were.
Ooh, that's a good question. The origins of social media.
In fact, why don't we throw that question to John first, since he might have been around closer to the orange of it than you.
Oh.
So, John, tell us about AOL.
I haven't been insulted so much since somebody called me a graybeard. Hi. The origins of social media. Well, I don't know. It was the first caveman, you know, smacked the other one. But I think I got started with it. I find very clear. A very clear path from what we're doing today back to at least to the 80s, to Usenet and places like and the Well and bulletin boards and things like that. So that's at least, you know, we could probably trace it back farther than that. But I think those things recognizably look like things we are doing today and had similar emergent behavior. So we are sitting on the shoulders of giants.
That's actually right around the same time I was thinking of as well. It was... I mean, it probably happened before that as well, but that was actually one of the first places where I made contacts with people all over the world, and they, you know, they became your social circle of friends. You, these were people that didn't necessarily need to be sitting in the same room as you or that you'd even met, but at the same time, getting together with them would happen seamlessly.
Yeah, I think for me, it was IRC. I mean, like... 93, 94, and I've been a member of a couple just, we called them current events, channels where people just discuss things that were going on in the world for at least 15 years. I have friends all over the planet that I've never met, but that I've chatted with almost on a semi-daily basis for as long as I've been online. It's just that's not as approachable for most people, and it's not out in the public as much. You kind of have to go find it.
But is it the same group of people?
It is, yeah. It's a group. I used to run a forum for a long time as well, which had about 50,000 members in it. And then the people who would meet on the forum would go to an IRC channel just to chat live. So this was kind of a precursor to blogs. It would have been the term back then was EN, everything, nothing, for a website. This is probably circa 97, 98.
I guess my first social thing got my email account and, used Pine to get in and way back in the day, and then would telnet into a chat room. And it was such a wild west then. It was just a total free for all. And already people were doing the same sort of ridiculous things that Snapchat allows people to do at scale and with pictures.
So you would get picture, you would get lots of A, S, and L with a question mark?
I actually concealed my gender. I was already sort of knew that would be a thing. So I called myself Jello B after the lead singer of the Dead Kennedys, and even that wasn't enough to brush people off. So it took a while before I came back, and then I actually ran message boards for several years in the publishing industry before I jumped over to IT. So I've been doing this online thing in some form for pretty much my whole career.
So would you say that your prior experience as a moderator for a group organization is assists you in your day-to-day aspects when it comes to social media? Because I think you have a better frame of reference for dynamics that are outside your control.
That puts it really well, actually. I didn't know I was training. I didn't know I was putting in that 10,000 hours, but I was. And the doesn't matter, platform irrespective, psychology is still the same. And so, you know, how you moderate, deputizing the community to moderate was a strategy I got to early on. You know, how to when to interfere, when to leave the conversation alone, when to engage. All that was, yeah, definitely a lot of training. And people are very passionate about subjects of all types. So it is good training. It's customer-facing training. And I had an internship, and I would never hire anybody who didn't have customer experience, real customer experience, preferably restaurant or very one-to-one, hand-to-hand combat, because I found that service industry training was the best for doing what we do in a virtual world.
Yeah, very adept. I mean, there's really no band hammer for trolls in a restaurant, but it definitely is one. Though I think that we could probably come up with a World of Warcraft restaurant that would actually have trolls and band hammers, or at least hammers. I wield a pretty mighty band hammer.
I'm more of a banta hammer man myself.
It's actually one of the things I'm the most proud of, I think, although I don't necessarily take credit for it. It is the fact that there's so much good faith in our community, right? There when people sometimes people come in by they're used to game forums or BBSs or gaming stuff or you know other dark corners of the internet where they especially in the olden days. And they would be very surprised when they got into our forums and that the conduct was so clean and everyone was in good faith. And we really don't, you know, it's pretty hard. I mean, you control people, but especially on Twitter these days, but it's pretty hard to get traction if no one takes you up on it.
Yeah. Have you ever been banned from your own podcast?
No, but I'm working on it.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see if we can make that happen tonight.
Asshole.
We can at least play the
AOL Instant Messenger was really big when I was a kid. Yes, I am a little bit younger out of this gang, but yeah, it still was in. There's a bit of a chat room interaction with strangers that wasn't weird thing yet, still. But mostly AOL, and then actually, I was in college when Facebook was released, when it was still actually focused on college kids and was kind of a big deal to be able to get on there. And boy, is it different now.
What was your AOL handle?
I was so emo.
It's going to be good.
I know it, and I don't want to admit it. All right, this is a year.
Please
in
tell
review.
Me it's something Linkin Park related, isn't it?
Close. Dashboard Confessional. It's a bit more whiny. It was like Vindicated Enigma.
Ooh.
So anyway, that happened. The internet
was that
happened.
Actually a reference to the Meatloaf song?
He only knows Meatloaf that you eat.
I just found something from 1990 in rec.games.nethack. That tells you what I was doing in grad school.
John, I say we take this podcast back over. Amy, you too. This has been a fun experiment, but this is the Geek Whisperers. And
this is a whole separate podcast. We should totally do this.
the Gabe and Anti Takeover Geek Whisperers podcast?
Well, no, just talking about old shit. It's fun.
I think that such a huge diversity of people who listen to the show that, you know, kind of grew up on that. And it's something that we just don't talk about anymore because it was so specific and niche-y. And everything being so social and out in the open, we kind of forget that there were, like, you know, almost clans that lived on the internet at one time.
Yeah. So I was actually, you know, shooting for Amy, John, and Matt thought that there was a need to start a podcast that dealt with social media. So I feared that maybe we could go back to what the roots of that social media were.
I liked the fact that the first episode was the Twitters won't tweet itself. And for me, as somebody who was, I would say, probably still relatively new to Twitter up until 2011, it was one of those things that, you know, really kind of hit home with how Twitter became this kind of just over, for me, I mean, in a very quick time frame, became kind of like the absolute, you know, premier place to go to for, you know, social. Much more so, in my view, than Facebook or G+ or any of these other things. For me, social is pretty much Twitter.
Gabe, I'm curious, what makes it feel social to you? Like, are there any kind of elements we can break apart and look at?
You know, I think it's one of these things where you have to kind of like, you know, make your way. Because when you first come on, you're mostly anonymous. Most people don't know you. You kind of have to stalk and lurk and kind of at some point get familiar enough to interject yourself into the conversation and build a following over a period of time. I mean, I think when I first came on, I had, you know, I went to VMworld. I wrote a blog post about years ago, but I went to VMworld. I had 30 followers on Twitter. I met some people. Next thing you know, I had 100. And then I got exposed to a world that was totally outside my scope of reference. And now I probably have, you know, just a huge group of friends that has basically I would never probably been exposed to in the past.
I found that's true as well. Somebody actually summed up Twitter as they said that you use LinkedIn to maintain your professional contacts. You use Facebook to maintain contact with your family, and you use Twitter to find out who you want to have a drink with.
That just about sums it up for me too. I mean, I know through the connections that all spawned from Twitter, really, I've been introduced to this community, and Gabe and I were just talking before the show that I didn't even realize that the first time him and I interacted was on a past podcast I was on with Mark Farley. And I met him through social media and going to events. And it's really amazing to see how the ripple effect of getting involved in this community and really working on that sweat equity that Amy always focuses on, it just kind of keeps building this opportunity.
Yeah, I think it's also a place where your personality can kind of come forward. You know, there's some people who are a gimmick, and then there's people. I mean, I think the person I am on Twitter is the person I am, period. I think it's odd that I can be completely myself on Twitter for some reason and feel completely comfortable doing that, where I probably wouldn't say things that I do on Twitter sometimes in person.
Well, here's a question. If we're doing year in review and thinking about Twitter, and that was sort of our kickoff episode, what do you have we taught you anything? Not to be too navel gazy, but have we been successful in our mission of sort of talking shop and sharing what we've learned sometimes, oftentimes, frankly, the hard way with the community? Do you think we've been successful in that mission? What else would you like to hear us talk about?
No, very much so. And I think for somebody like myself who has a role in a company that isn't necessarily technical marketing or, you know, PR or where my job isn't to do social, but I, you know, maybe aspire to do that at some point or, you know, have it be part of my career that is more, you know, customer focused, customer facing. Cause I think all of us who work in tech, who are active on Twitter kind of put some of our job into it. I've learned a ton of information about stuff that I probably would not have ever thought about. just by listening to the shows. You know, the whole thing that, you know, I didn't know that there was a battle between PR and marketing. I thought they were the same people, right?
Aren't they? And
from what I understand, that there is like the cult of PR and then the cult of marketing, and somehow they don't always necessarily meet and work together when it comes to the social media arm.
It's true. Like I've gotten some black eyes.
And well, even some.
Yeah, do they see it as, you know, who are these people that are, you know, tweeting out stuff and being part of the company and putting stuff that we would normally put in a press release, but doing it 140 characters. And, you know, it seems like anathema to them.
Yeah.
Right?
And as we hit on many times, it was never about the medium. It doesn't matter whether we're tweeting or posting on LinkedIn or posting on Facebook. There's just been a social revolution that the metaphor that John ran with in an episode where there used to be just one mouthpiece that was the PR organization, and marketing funneled through them and everyone else funneled through them. And now it's this kind of amoeba that everyone is part of that exterior that can reach out and touch the world. And that single point of truth, that single outlet to the world is no longer the case. And that's rippled, the repercussions of that have rippled in different ways in different organizations. But to say it's been with some tension is definitely something we've mm-hmm. focused on and tried to kind of understand by bringing it out into the open.
Yeah. I was going to echo some of the same things that Gabriel said, that I do think that you've touched on some interesting subjects over the year. And I think through the first year, you've done a good job of establishing what your basis is and what your personalities are. Think of it as like the first season of a TV show or something, where you set the stage for what the basis is. And you know, I hope in future years you start doing the edgier things and going outside of where you've been the first year and actually trying to possibly influence a little bit more rather than just reflect on.
Hmm.
I will say that I've sent the podcast, even when it started, I've sent it to most people I work with that are in marketing in my field. And I think, you know, this is like the ultimate kind of, it's a great thing, I think, in my viewpoint, as somebody who has no absolutely zero training in marketing at all, but who has to do stuff that is marketing related as part of his job as a, you know, as a evangelist or a social face or even a face of the company that I work for. And it's great training. I mean, there's a lot to learn from this podcast. And that's one thing. I mean, there are podcasts out there that I will casually listen to every now and then, but there are very few that I will listen to every single episode and sometimes a couple times. And I think it's because I'm learning something, right?
Hey, thank you. That's why we started it. I mean, it was kind of born out of frustration from my end. And so many social media marketing things do come from people who have a more PR genome or have more of a, I don't know, we're actually more community builders than social media people, but that's what seems to work here in the enterprise IT space, because in some ways social media is the every other industry catching up to enterprise and enterprise sales, because enterprise sales are all about relationships. It's all about building relationships. It's all about customer success. It's all about coming back to you next year and figuring out what else you need and working with you for years and years and years. And in some ways, the transactional nature of many other businesses have been transformed by social media, but they're just coming to us, what we already know and what we already do. The reason we started the podcast was I wasn't able to talk about this with other people. I was looking at a social media marketing agenda meeting, a conference that's coming up in the next year. And I looked down through each of the agenda items and all the different seminars, and I'm like, there's maybe two out of the 100 that I would even sit in. It just doesn't speak to me at all.
And one thing I did notice, and I didn't realize it, like the professional Twitter people, you know, it's like there's people with thousands and thousands of followers and you know, they put out strategy and there's, you know, blogs trade mags and all kinds of stuff dedicated to like being, you know, social PR person. And what they, you know, basically a lot of it's kind of like self-help books or common sense at some point. You know, it's like go be social level of that stuff. And I don't know if you know, as professional marketers as some of you are, would you even entertain going to a social media conference like you would a VMworld or an EMC World or, you know, Dell or any of the other events.
It probably would have been good for my career, but yeah, go ahead.
I have tried to do that. And you know, John, we had you as a social professional on a Cisco, you know, social media conference. But I've been to broader ones, you know, where it's it was regional. I've spoken, I've been attendee, and I definitely learn things. I engage with my peers. It's really interesting, but it is hard, to John's point, not to feel like we're doing something a little bit different and unsure if it's because of the industry. So we're in an industry where people aren't afraid to get involved, I guess. There are, you know, they're highly technical people. They're not afraid of new platforms. The history of how social came about, I think, was telling, and that everybody here's got a story. Often people are early adopters. That it's not true for everyone, not to make that blanket statement, but there's a whole lot of us who've been engaged for a long time. And we are part of a distributed industry. So the fact that we would use something to connect us between times where we would be together as people makes a lot of sense. So when I'm there at those kinds of events with other social media people, I still feel like I don't feel as at home as I do at Cisco Live, VMworld, EMC World, et cetera. I feel much more with and of my people when I'm with the technologists. And
you're a geek's geek.
You know what this reminds me of is just to highlight the other side a little bit, that as much as I agree, for me, I'm on Gabe's, on the same radar as Gabe, where this is kind of a sense of common sense to me, that you just kind of be yourself and help others and do these sort of things that are seemingly natural to me that really work well in the social community that we're a part of. But if there's anything I learned from this year is that you can't take for granted that not everyone, that doesn't come natural to everyone. I'm thinking in particular of Podcast 8 with Sunshine, who really taught us her strategies that are very intentional about getting out of her introverted self to be the extroverted, outgoing person that you need to be successful, for the most part, in the social community. And a lot of strategic tips that are really powerful. So I think the idea of training couldn't be a bad thing at all, just to recall that not everyone will just pick this up naturally.
Right, right. And Amy often says, like, we're not horse waterers, meaning that we lead horses to water, but we don't make them drink. I've, over my years at VMware, I have tried to get so many people engaged, and, you know, a third of them do and two-thirds of them don't, and that's okay. You know, it's not – this is kind of a new skill set. It's not – everybody in the whole building doesn't need to be tweeting about the same thing. It's okay. We all have different places we're focusing. I think that's fine. I actually just wanted also to add to go back and not to pat ourselves and hurt ourselves patting ourselves on the back too much. Some of this was I was going to the wrong conferences. I was actually last month I was at a conference. It was full of B2B and B2C social media people, and they were all wrestling with similar things as we were, whether they were an airline or whether they were, you know, a Dell or a VMware. So I think the mature social media marketers are all trying to put this into place. How do you meld the old school demand gen and now we've got paid advertising together with you know, the community building and external influencers in a world where everybody can talk back, you know, all that sort of good stuff.
Push back a little bit on one thing you said, John. Like, and again, not to say, you know, we're so different we can't communicate with any of our other social media marketing types.
We're special snowflakes.
But this special snowflake has found recently that, especially in our sort of Star Wars themed miniseries we have going, where we're picking fights with people across the organization, I've been learning so much and really been going out of my way internally and externally to engage with people in PR, in AR, in demand gen, et cetera. And I think I've been learning more than ever about social media and what we are and what we're not by engaging with people across these other disciplines. So I know a little kumbaya there, but that's been one of the most interesting things, to see how people are wrestling with similar problems, but from a wildly different perspective, has been extremely instructive.
That might be a little foreshadowing, Amy, that I have a feeling we're going to continue that trend into 2014 of, you know, picking fights and then seeing how wrong we are or seeing how right occasionally. But
well, I think one of the messages that you've delivered all along, I mean, Geek Whispers has delivered all along, is that you can't be a decent social media force by being in your face. You need to be involved in the community and be social with your social media, not use it as a billboard.
Yeah, you can't just send out the corporate tweet and expect it. You know, you have to give to get back type of thing, and you kind of have to be genuine and kind of be yourself. And I think, you know, the people that have good followings, there are people that are personalities per se on Twitter, and then there are people that, you know, are gone to for, you know, their technical expertise and the things they write, and there are people that are just having fun. And I think the perfect combination is having all of those qualities in one person, and I tend to follow those type of people and who are truly genuine and that I enjoy conversing with. Mm-hmm.
This year, I have seen an interesting shift in other companies as well. At VMworld, I had a lot of people come up to me and ask from different companies, so not working for us, and ask me not like how do I do Twitter or how do I do Facebook? But the question universally was, how do I work with the community? And I thought that was a really big attitudinal shift. You know, also not a question with an easy answer other than you show up. But I thought that was interesting in the whole industry. I don't know. Is that – I mean, do you think that that's a – did I catch some unusually smart people, or do you think that people are starting to get it?
I think there's a lot of companies out there who have a hard time embracing a community in a sense that the way like VMware and other companies have. It's just not something that they feel there's a return on investment on sometimes in the traditional sense, right? I mean, am I going to get leads from this? Am I going to close a deal from this? Is it worth our time to devote people to this, depending on our size? I think for smaller companies, definitely creating a social aspect is second or third or fourth to lead generation and, you know, closing business.
Yeah, and I feel I failed you guys a little as the bearer of social metrics and feeling like that's something that needs a lot of highlighting on Geek Whispers. I want to zoom in on that a little further because I think there's something in the startup culture that really appreciates the lead generation from social. And I'm also seeing that big enterprise companies are following suit and really adopting the HubSpot essence of integration of demand gen, social, inbound, outbound marketing in a meaningful way. So I think there's a lot more to explore there.
Yeah, I would be curious. I mean, a future show of pulling in a spattering of, you know, social media or somewhat type people that are at startups, small ones, you know, some 100, 150 people or lower, because it's a totally different type of play for some organizations. And some corporate cultures really adopt and accelerate that. And then there's other ones that are completely closed off to a complete, you know, totally.
How many people have actually listened to the VMware community forums or podcasts? I ask because actually I think one of the most interesting some of the most interesting podcasts I've listened to have been the VMware community podcasts. Simply because John has done a good job of pulling in the people who are working on issues that the VMware community is facing at that time.
Well, thanks. I mean, we try. It is kind of interesting. I mean, for those of you who don't know, I run a weekly podcast. It's live. It's it's interview style. It's a bunch of people show up and we talk, and I have a guest every week. Usually it's a VMware me talking to another VMware person, which you would think you've seen so many times is not very interesting. But one of the secrets is we don't rehearse at all. And most of the time I don't have talking points. So I just ask the questions I'm interested in. I have gotten feedback from a couple people. Like once or twice people would send out, I've CC'd on an email to their whole group, like usually somebody new to VMware. Like I was just had the most amazing experience. I was on this John Troyer's podcast and I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, we just had a conversation and it was great. You know, because normally webinars and podcasts are scripted out, to the nth degree. So I think that people could. I mean, we do talk about our own products at some point. It is what it is, right?
And one thing that I've noticed, and this is because I'm pretty much a newbie to any speaking to people on a podcast, but it is incredibly hard to carry. I think it must be incredibly hard to carry a show and do what you guys are doing. I think a lot of people think, well, yeah, you get on there and talk, but it's like public speaking to an extent because you have no no feedback initially from the audience that you're speaking to. And
how do you think you guys are doing so far?
Hit or miss. I mean, I
well, you know, there is a reason that some of the most successful podcasts are from comedians, right? Because this is in some sense some sort of form of improv. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes it goes well and sometimes it doesn't go as well. But it is hard, especially, I mean, my live podcast, I also have live chat going. So that's crazy because I'm reading the chat. I'm talking to people. I don't have a producer or anything. So I'm doing everything myself. And we tried to add video to the mix. And then even with it, that just melted down. It was too much. So it is definitely a multitasking art. But you get used to it.
I was going
to
see if we could shift gears a little bit. So I know in every good year in review show, you got to make some predictions, as wild as they may be. So, what do you think? Either the predictions, and they can be as prescriptive as you like. Game on. What do you predict for the Geek Whispers in 2014?
More podcasts.
What do you predict about the industry or how things will be marketed or media?
It's the year of the Linux desktop.
And to draw a little parallel there of, you know, again, inside baseball here, I suppose, but if it's enterprise IT, you'll all know the joke we're making of how many times people have said this is the year of VDI. But it makes me think of how often people have said this is the year of social media. This is the year of social media. And I do feel like we're almost in that, you know, likening to what you're saying about VDI, we're almost in a post-social media world where we've moved on, where it's understood and people are – there's maturity. So I think it opens up new possibilities, new problems to solve.
Yeah, I would say that's probably been the year of – I mean, the year of social media has already passed, to be honest. I mean, it's – you know, when the Quaker Oats guy has a Twitter account, it's there's a shark that's jumped, you know.
Well, yeah, a guy and one of my colleagues came up to me and he said kind of with bright, wide eyes, hey, John, do you think social media is going to be a career for many years? And I said, no, of course not. That's like saying is the PowerPoint guy going to be a career? Well, yeah, for a few people, but everybody just uses it.
But then I guess there's a question for me that's like, does Twitter become the next Facebook where you just kind of feel compelled to go and check it? I think that it's a little different because the reach is so much broader, and you can be a little less formally selective because you're not sharing as much.
I mean, we're part
time.
Of
a, we're, I can stop at any time.
On each platform we take part in, there's a bit of a culture, and then in each of the circles that we take part in, on top of that, and we've talked about the tribal nature, and I'm glad Andy brought up, you know, how did we get started in social? Because it connects all the way through and it shows us the history of why we are where we are to some degree, that we still have that Dunbar number following set of tribes where we connect with like minds to some degree, and we see each other at the same conferences and we use Twitter in similar ways in this way. So in that way, I think the platform is less and less important going forward. That's going to be my bold prediction, that we don't really care if the content originated from Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram or anything else that comes our way, that it's going to be more about the connections with the people, and we'll find a way of not caring about the tool as much as the people.
Ooh. I have a related prediction. I'm still bullish on what a marketer would call branded communities, which are smaller social groupings or smaller social networks or what we used to call forums and bulletin boards. I think that the age of one Facebook social graph to rule them all, that we all go to Facebook and they're trying to turn it, you know, they're trying to turn it into both baby pictures and the New York Times at the same time. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think we're going to have a universal me. I think we still have enough different personas, and the technology affordances are still such that I predict the resurgence of the specialized community in 2014. We're not going to all just hang out on – we're going to go back to our niche communities.
Yeah, well, I think it's the dichotomy that I mentioned earlier. You know, you don't necessarily want your your mother or your kids knowing who you're going out drinking with tonight.
Or you don't want to talk about, you know, you can only talk about, you know, iSCSI primitives so much on Facebook before your high school friends and your wives' cousins start to ask, you know, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Have you ever seen me talk iSCSI primitives, Sean?
I haven't, but I'd love to.
I can bore you in moments.
Well, it gets us to a question that I know we talked about a little bit, and Andy, you had brought up of, you know, privacy. I'd like to hear some predictions around privacy. Are we going to give more of it away next year? Are we going to see some blowback from some of the hacking incidents we had? Is it generational? What's going to happen? Are people going to try to manage it with the platforms? Or are they going to just give it up and throw it all in?
I think people have largely already given up and thrown it all in.
Yeah, I think that it's an interesting thing for things like Facebook. I think initially Facebook was something, I don't think they realized what they had. Right, it was a thing where people were kind of social and hanging out, and people want to see pictures of each other and stuff and whatnot. Now it's basically they know everything about your habits. You know, when you go to the store, when you're doing certain things, who you want to communicate with, what things you like, and that's another thing like Pinterest and things like that. There's a lot of power in that information to be sold to companies who can market to you. And that information, I mean, people they basically have no idea that so much data is being collected on them. And essentially, I think it's too far gone now. We've already conceded the fact that no matter what I do, how I get on the internet, unless I'm on a, you know, Tor client or something like that, and, you know, I don't have no cookies and all that type of stuff, they're going to be kind of, you know, I've conceded that I am not private online.
One of the things I do adore is that sort of big data model. And I think you're right, Gabriel. And I actually think LinkedIn doesn't quite know all that it has yet either, because people don't have the best ways to parse all the data that they've got, or they haven't applied. I don't know why. It hasn't happened 100% yet, but my favorite thing is the Facebook you may like, you know, feature where it suggests things for me. And because I post about food so much because of the endless bacon and unicorns, I get a combination of weight loss suggestions and like chocolate cakes that I can have delivered to my house. So those ads come up in tandem, and it's my favorite thing.
A moomoo with a bacon print.
Are you two going to go bacon on us now?
No, and that's, you know, we should have a whole discussion on how to pick a Twitter handle that's lasting.
Because that is a great, yeah, go Gabriel, what do you think?
Well, yeah, because it's like, I, you know, when I first was getting on, I have the Gabriel Chapman is my, I have a Twitter handle with that, but I totally forgot about it. And then when I went to register again for Twitter, I registered and I'm like, oh, let's come up with something that's kind of goofy. I mean, I didn't follow any technology people at all. I was following sports people, and I'm like, oh, fuck, bacon's king. That sounds cool. And then I registered it and put it on there, and just out of a lark. And now, you know, don't get me wrong, dude, I love bacon, but I don't want bacon mints. I don't want bacon vodka. I don't want like a bacon sarong. I mean, I just don't want those things. I just want to eat bacon. And so now it's like, now you're the bacon guy. And sometimes that opens a door, and sometimes it, you know, it's kind of goofy and everybody kind of can talk about it. But then, you know, I would not always want to be known for bacon.
I think you the bacon gal rather than you as the bacon guy.
And you do know you can edit your Twitter handle,
oh,
right?
Oh yeah, but I think there's I think it's sometimes it might be too late, right? Because
it's a brand identity.
Now, I mean, bacon is king is my brand. You know, when I'll go to a trade show or something like that, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I know you." They don't know who I am. They know what I do, but they still know, "Oh, you're the bacon guy, man." And so it's almost.
I'm in a similar boat, and not just bacon related, but just this last week, I had to introduce myself, and somebody said, "Oh, you know, what's your Twitter handle?" And I, you know, comms ninja, and they always say, "Was your name taken?" Yes, yes, it was actually. When your name is Amy Lewis, you are the John Smith of females, and you joined Twitter late, and it's gone. Like, I would have been Amy Lewis 173,000. So,
you could have spelled Lewis with an E or a 3 instead of an E, and you would have been elite.
But it's an interesting challenge as more people come on board of do you choose your name? Do you choose, what's a brand that lasts? That could be kind of an interesting thing that we approach. in the coming year.
There's an episode right there, How Not to Snark. I mean, it's
actually, that's a great one.
Because, you know, our corporate culture is you don't engage, you don't FUD, you don't spread anything. If somebody's bagging on you, you just kind of let it slide off your back. And I agree with that to an extent. But then, boy, is it hard to hold your tongue. Because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, especially a startup, it's your baby. You know, it's you're really passionate about it, and somebody's calling your baby ugly, you know, you don't like that.
I don't know. So, hey, Amy, you've been asking us, do you have any predictions for the next year?
I think we're going to see more and more people trying to get into the private communication game. And that's not much of a big prediction because I'm seeing this evolve quickly now. So,
given that this very week, Instagram and Twitter both added pictures in private messaging?
Yes. So I think it's an interesting trend that Snapchat is probably behind, at least they're the most prominent. And it's clearly a next-gen, user-driven request. And I wonder what that's going to be like. One of the things I think that would be interesting for us to sort of talk through is how the more public you are, in some ways, the more need you have to communicate privately on some topics. You know, topics and discussions get big. You need to take them offline. There seems to be somewhat an agreement, at least in our community, of when that is appropriate. So, but it's interesting that I think that's going to, we're going to see that trend more and more. And I'll be curious about what that drive toward private, quick visual communication will do to public communication.
Well, I have a big data prediction. I predict that big data will be recognized as bullshit in next year. I think it already has been for the most part. Most people don't have the right data in the first place to ask a question. Most people don't have the appropriate data to ask the question that they wanted to think they want to ask. Big data is not magic. And do you remember all this EA? We called it EAI back in the day, enterprise application integration stuff and EDI stuff that we used to do. Like integrating data and making it sensible is actually super hard. So I spent my grad school looking at a data set that was incomprehensible and I didn't get much truth out of it. So I'm kind of bitter. But I think big data is kind of bullshit.
But then I think about, from bringing it into the social media angle, how social listening practices. We talked to Carrie DeLeo from EMC way back when on Podcast 5, and she told us a little about what her practice is and where she came from at Bluefin, the company that got bought up by Twitter, because they were doing basically real-time like movie predictions and TV ratings, because people were just saying so publicly through social what they were thinking and what they were watching that they found that information was quite valuable.
Extreme corner case. 99.9% of companies are not Netflix and not Twitter.
I think there's also a large tendency for people to think that whatever has come before them is useless and won't necessarily fit what they're doing at this point. So the idea that somebody has some way of analyzing their data doesn't mean anything to what's important to you today. If we're going to jump in here with our predictions, this one was just kind of a broad general one, but I'm guessing that there's going to be at least one or two new interesting social media niches that come up in the next year that people hadn't thought of. The concept of like a Twitter that's your short thoughts gathered together, or the idea of a Pinterest that's your mural wall of various different pictures. There's going to be some new niche along these lines that people will come up and generate. And I don't really have any predictions on what those will be, but I'm sure that there will be a couple new ones that come along this year.
How about you, Gabe?
There was a time, where there were, I think one thing that's kind of somehow come back into fruition or be popular again, and maybe it's not this year, maybe it's the year after, but, it's that the concept of home delivery for a lot of technology or a lot of items, right? I mean, there was the grocery truck company that, the company would order your food online and they would deliver it. I actually tried that service. It was because it was based out of where I lived back in the 90s. And it was a cool concept. And I think, people, they're so used to doing so much business on Amazon, and I know people that buy exclusively almost everything they can off Amazon. Aren't they also starting to venture into foodstuffs? And, as we start to get past the dynamic, once they make those economics work and the ability to transport food and stuff, something like that, it's coming. There's a reason why, you know, Amazon's in this, looking at this drone technology. I don't know if it's just, it's, you know, there are those of us who are cynical thinking, oh, it's just a bunch of BS. But I think that, you know, they're definitely trying to learn something from that process that they can push into something else that they're going to deliver. Whether that is, you know, you want smokes at 3 a.m. and you're too lazy to go drive out and get it, or whatever it is.
I did actually want to mention one thing that I read recently, that tied into an awful lot of the discussion that's been going on today. I read a book named Spam that's subtitled Shadow History of the Internet. And actually, early on in that book, it starts off talking about Usenet and the spam and trolling abuses on Usenet, and runs right up to the current day.
From MIT Press. Looks interesting.
And it ties into an awful lot of social media over the years. It covers the spamming techniques that go on social media today.
All right, I'm going to switch gears. I've got a question for each and every one of you. What's one thing you want us to definitively cover in 2014?
I want to pick fights with more people.
Any specifics come to mind?
Well, AR is obviously next in my lineup, because I haven't hit them yet.
And John, how about yourself? What's one thing you want us to get more into in 2014?
So I think that we are seeing a rise of a class of IT communicators. And I also think that is colliding with a whole micro-publishing movement and Kickstarter movement. And so I actually think until now, we've been using social media to increase our careers, to move to new jobs, to get raises. And, you know, all these IT guys, they have really good salaries, right? They have six-figure salaries. They're doing fine. But there should be eventually a friend of ours was telling me that his wife, you know, referred to his new book as the new kitchen floor. So, you know, eventually we have to explain to our families why we're spending time, nights and weekends doing this stuff. And so I predict that we are going to see what I want to work on is ways to help people make money, you know, and it's not like they're struggling journalists who are happy about $100, but, you know, a few thousand bucks here, a few thousand bucks there. If you're writing a blog post or for your blog or for your, you know, some project you work on for a company freelance, I'm predicting some sort of freelance nirvana here and with some coin being made.
Actually, I have you covered, John. My take on this is that I'm going to help develop the products that you're going to write about and blog about, and that works out beautifully for me.
I feel like we need to charge for this podcast. Just throwing that out there. Kidding.
Well, we might have sponsors.
I think you guys have done a wonderful job of developing your brand and what you're doing, and I want to see you hit the edges a little bit more. Go hit a few more nerves. Go outside of the comfort of just discussing the inside of social media.
Hmm. I like it.
So what kind of areas would you like us to explore? Like dirty hippie Bitcoin stuff, or all marketers are liars, or technologies, or what areas?
The black side of the net would be a kind of interesting place to talk about. You know, people who hate social media. Go stick fingers in their wounds.
How do you convert a non-believer?
That's a good one.
There's a lot of people who don't. It's like, I see no value in this. Why are you wasting your time?
There are certainly people out there who are vocal in that way.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, and I really want us to expand our boundaries, but in a slightly different way, where we hunt for those real leaders in different types of thought. Like, we make reference to Malcolm Gladwell theories and some of the practices of a guy on Twitter, Scott, known as Unmarketing. And some of these, I call them whale hunting attempts, where we're going after these big minds. And we've all kind of plotted about this, but I think we really need to bring in some guests outside of our personal circle of friends and expand the borders of what we're approaching here as social, technical, on-the-fence people.
That would be awesome as well.
Yeah, I would love that, because there's so many people that I have no idea who those people are that you just spoke about. So, I mean, it would be worthwhile to hear perspectives that are so far outside of something that I would even remotely normally see.
Good. Well, any thoughts to round out this end of year podcast before we sign off and see you next year?
I don't know. I got no final words.
I just want to say thank you to each of you, Amy and John. Definitely not Gabe or Andy. You guys, you'll be lucky if you get an invite back. But Amy and John, it's been really powerful to get to talk to you every week and like kind of digest the stuff that we're doing by day for work, but also for fun, and then really put it into words that meant a lot and kind of bring everyone into our own campfire to have a conversation instead of hiding behind closed doors. I think we've exposed some really big ideas that has grown into a small subsection of a community that we can really build even further in 2014.
Oh, shucks. I thank you. Kind words. And back at you. I've actually learned a lot more than I expected this year from this podcast. It's been definitely been a professional highlight. So thank you as well.
I refer to it as my master's class, and I will go ahead and thank Andy and Gabriel because without the community,
I was playing.
Thank you. Beaten down.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, because I was actually going to thank Gabe and say that we should go hit some other podcasts sometime.
We should. You know what? It should be the Gabe and Andy guest visitor. It's like Batman and Robin show up on your podcast.
I'm sure there are other podcasts that we could go out and interview them as effectively as we've interviewed Matt, Amy, and John tonight.
We'll hook you up. It's no problem. I think it's a meme.
You know, for me, speech is just something that has to happen organically. The same thing happens when I write. But if I'm like put on the spot, sometimes it just doesn't work. And so there has to be some way of practicing that to where you can do a podcast. And I think it does take that first 15, 20, 30 episodes before you really feel kind of comfortable in your own skin speaking and knowing that you can fix or edit or, it's not the end of the world if you screw up.
Well, and some of it's chemistry too. And like, knowing, if you've, if you've been on sales calls or whatever, it takes some time to get the back and forth right. And so you're not stepping on each other. I'm kind of disappointed that there's no magic bullet.
I would also guess that it takes, a handful of people to actually come up with an inspiration for what to talk about.
The original Storage Monkeys podcast was great. It became a close match. I mean, that was
good.
That got me really interested in listening. And then that was kind of a driver to get me into social as well, was listening to Greg and them and almost feeling like they were like family members or friends. You felt he had this great rapport and it just pushed as a wave over you as you listened. But Greg. Adam Carolla is another one. I listen to that one all the time and just think that it's a great podcast because it is, you don't realize how hard it is to get them to talk about something for 2 hours sound fresh.
And it seems like trivial. I agree absolutely 100%. It seems trivial, but one of the things that Greg brings to the table is his laugh. It's important. We don't have an Ed McMahon here who just – maybe Amy, but he can laugh and laugh and laugh. It really adds something to the energy of his show, as cheesy as that is. It's every week, man. It's a grind. Yeah. I don't recommend starting projects that are weekly unless you're really – I recommend doing it every week, but you just don't know what you're getting into.
This is the third podcast I've tried to run with, and this one worked the best chemistry-wise because I think we've all done a really good job at sharing the burden because I think it takes a lot of time to hunt down people, to set up agendas, to make sure people show up on the phone on time, and we've all kind of really showed up and invested in it in a way that you just hope happens but doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. People I thought I would never meet – or ever interact with in a personal, physical face to face or meet them ever, or people I completely looked up to. I mean, there was a point in time I was just like a Joe admin and I would listen to, Greg and Mark do their thing. I never thought I would meet those people. I'm like, I thought those people are outside my frame of reference, outside my world. I'll never, come into that particular scope or circle.
Isn't that a cool feeling?
It is the best. It really was. It was like, And then to have it be reversed and actually I had somebody come up to me at a trade show and says, I've been reading your stuff forever. I follow you on Twitter and you've inspired me. Dude, that was like, I swear to God, I could have croaked. I would have never thought.
It's amazing.
And boy, is it a drug, it's like, now it's not, I don't do this because of, I just put stuff out there because that's why I don't blog or write as much as I used to. I have to really kind of be in the moment and then I sit down and write it all. And then the only thing I edit for it is just, misspellings.
Yeah. How do you not follow Amy on Twitter? It's like, it's half the Twitter feed, isn't it?
It's half of Twitter.
Honestly, it's addicting. Yeah. It's I find it such a I make sure to put Amy on a list that where I can see all her tweets because I find it. This is open honesty hour. End of the year means honesty, and I love watching you tweet. It's hilarious. It makes my day.
It is very funny.
I do. I got to admit, I end up clicking on your profile a lot just to see the rest of the conversation.
Right.
I only have 10,000. Only have 10,000 more tweets to catch up with you, Amy.
And Amy, do you want to finish that thought?
Yeah, just again, thanks for the community. It makes it all worthwhile. So I've learned a ton this year, and that's from you, Matt, and you, John, and also Andy and Gabriel as the representatives of the community we've got here. So really appreciate it. It's been an amazing year.
No, thank you guys for having us on.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Keep up the good work.
So happy holidays from your Geek Whispers, and have a great new year. We'll talk to you again in 2014.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Leave our butt cracks out of this game.
Inside jokes.
Can we please be recording? Because it's awesome. Yeah. We lost Gabriel.
Wow, that
right
went over
there.
Well.
Did we lose Gabe?
We lost awesome the call. Baby.
There he is. Now he's back.
Was that me? I lost the call then. I'm like, yeah. Hello. Oh, great.
Wow.
I tend to listen to podcasts when it's early in the morning. Okay. You may hear screams in the background. It's Chargers
that
Broncos
happened.
Tonight, and it's like one of our big pivotal games. So, and my wife is a massive Charger fan.
Oh,
that was awesome.
More so than I, but that's like clear across my house.
Go for it.
If you know how to do that, do it.
I don't. I had to have to go listen to it real quick.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Andy Rooney.
And I'm grumpy.
And I'm the one girl who's ever been on 60 Minutes.
There's your intro right there.
Yep.